Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 109, featuring Daniel Trubovich. And I hope I got your name correct, Daniel. It's a fantastic podcast, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But first, let's make a couple of announcements. Sean is joining me.
We've got a lot.
We got a lot of good stuff going on. So let's start with from the top.
From the top, the biggest news is that we've just released V-Ray 3.5 for 3DS Max.
Yes, there's a lot going on in there. If you want to know more about it, on February 15th, we're going to have a webinar about it.
Free webinar.
So save the date or save the seat.
Right.
All you need to do is go to chaosgroup.com, and right there on the homepage, you'll see right near the top information about it, and just click on that and you'll get more information about the webinar. There's a lot of things going on about 3.5. You can go to our YouTube and check out some of the highlights there. I wrote several blog posts about it, so go to labs.chaosgroup.com and find out about that. I mean, it's huge, and specifically a lot of the things going on the GPU are incredible. Things with the adaptive lights, I mean, a lot of it's really, really big news. So 3.5 is big for us, for sure. What else is going on, Sean?
When this comes out, yesterday was the SciTech Awards.
Right. So we're recording this a little early, obviously, but Vlado will be at the SciTech Awards. He's in town now, which is great. I've been very busy with Vlado, which is also great. Mm-hmm. And so he will have his SciTech Awards. So very excited about that. I am actually going to have Vlado on a podcast at some point as well. So look forward to that. And you'll learn a lot about the SciTech Awards and probably about V-Ray 3.5. So look forward to that. Anything else going on, Sean?
Well, it's not old news, but it's still news. The CG Garage is still on Facebook.
That's right.
So still waiting for your follow.
Yeah, so follow us there. And we've got a lot of information that's happening about the podcast. If you want to know more of things that are happening in the news, and that is facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast, all one word, right?
Yes.
All right, great. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Daniel. He is a really incredible VFX artist, and who's now basically 100% focused his attention towards VR. And he's got a great history, as a lot of people do. He's from the former Yugoslavia, and he has some really great ideas about VR and he's infectious. Like, VR to him is a huge passion, and when you hear him talk about it, you are very much excited about it as well. Passion for art as well. So what he says about VR ties very closely towards the podcast I did earlier this couple podcasts ago with Kevin Mack, who is also passionate about art and VR. So I think the two of them should really get together because it'd be really cool. All right. I think that's about it, Sean, right?
For now.
All right. For now.
Stay tuned.
More later. All right. Hope you enjoy, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fernell.
I'm originally from ex-Yugoslavia. I'm old enough.
Oh, okay, ex-Yugoslavia.
To have experienced that country as the whole.
Do you know Igor? Igor's he's a concept artist. He's been on the podcast, and
I don't.
How is his last name pronounced? I don't know his last name, but he was from ex-Yugoslavia as well.
Connect us.
Yeah. Like, he's definitely in town. He's local.
Yeah. You should send me an email with like at least 5-6.
So far, it sounds like we have a long list I have to send you.
Yeah.
So you were in Yugoslavia.
Yes, I was in Yugoslavia. And then the part I'm coming from originally is Belgrade, which is in Serbia.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Okay. When was that? When did you leave?
So very early. So my dad was—he's a software engineer.
Okay.
And he was trained in the U.S. way back in, you know, with the rolling tapes,
yeah,
computers, Unisys, and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So because of him, I had computers since I was very young.
Okay.
And then I didn't really care that much until it hit me when I was about like 18.
Uh-huh.
And then I really dived into it.
Oh.
What happened is 3D Studio Max version 1. So that's where I come from.
All right.
So dad bought me, so I'm 18,
yeah,
18, maybe 19. So he bought me 386, very powerful 386 machine.
Uh-huh.
And went to a local guy, four floppy disks, 3D Studio Max version 1, and started learning.
Right.
And just the ability to, everybody wants to be a director, you know, like, mm-hmm, a lot of your friends are either musicians or some kind of directors.
Right.
And I even applied for a film academy,
mm-hmm,
and I was terrible. You know, like I didn't pass into even like I was totally terrible. I'm very much like a campaign guy, you know. I
okay.
just go and what do I need to learn now? I'll learn it and then go from there.
Right.
So that was like I will never be a director. And then 3D Studio Max comes and I can move my camera the way I want.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. I was sold.
Right.
So I'm 19.
Mm-hmm.
Learn for a year, I guess, something like this. This is very precise.
Mm-hmm.
And then I knew enough.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go somewhere, you know, away.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm 20, almost 21.
Mm-hmm.
I end up in Lisbon, Portugal.
Oh.
Yes. And I had pretty good substantial knowledge.
Right.
And I had a friend there who is like one of the best, Branko Neško is his name. He's mm-hmm. one of the maybe 1,000 best film sound mix down guys.
Right.
And he was already living there. And I hooked up with him, mm-hmm, and he told me, hey, come over.
Right.
I landed in 3 days. I was knocking at the door of a local studio in an apartment building, you know. Uh-huh. Carlos Cruz, he's one of the best, probably the best classic cartoon animator.
Right.
Award-winning guy. So he had his own little studio running CG.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 1991.
Mm.
And I knocked on the door and I got the job tomorrow.
Wow.
I was at the job tomorrow in Portugal, and my first job was a commercial jingle for opening title for a Lotto commercial, you know, National Lotto,
uh-huh,
which was Portuguese version is Toto Lotto.
Toto Lotto, yeah.
And man, that jingle ran for like 9 years.
Really?
Yes. And I did shots on it. You know, me and Carlos Cruz.
So, did you write? So, he wrote the music and did that, and you did the content. Yeah,
someone else did the music. We uh-huh. had the music, and he had this. It was called, I don't know if people are old enough to even know. He had this rack. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty good system. So I rendered in 3D Studio Max.
Right? Okay.
With scanline render, the billiard balls.
Okay.
You know, and if there's Portuguese people listening to
they
this.
They do.
They'll definitely, you know, remember that Toto Lotto. It was just billiard balls with numbers hitting each other.
Right.
I don't know, man, 10, 12 shots.
Right.
And he had this rack. It was called Venice.
Venice?
The system.
Okay.
It was like, I don't know, 20 cards.
Okay.
One after another, after another, after another, which gave him real-time capability, even back then, to manipulate contrast, you know, color hues. And that he used it for his cartoon stuff, too, for drawing.
Okay.
Because he was like with the drawing tables and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he handled CG, too, the rendered stuff, DGAs, whatever, whatnot. Mm-hmm. So that was my first job, and like it went for 9 years. I left Portugal after 2-3 years only to come back again in 2000.
Oh, really?
And it was still on TV. So it was weird. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. That's funny. But that's, yeah. So, okay. So you.
So early on, yeah.
Yeah, early on.
So totally that, sold on CG.
Totally sold. And yeah. Then where did you go from Lisbon?
So from Lisbon, I got back to Serbia. Then I did a lot of jingles for TV, a lot.
Right.
A few commercials, you know, just commercial stuff. Uh-huh. I TV advertising.
Right.
Yeah, that was it. For like 4 or 5 years, I was just doing that.
Okay.
A lot of it.
In Serbia?
In Serbia.
For Serbian television or?
Yeah, for Serbian various TV stations.
Okay.
And if it was a commercial, it was, you know, for different. It was like for orange juice and for construction company and, you know, stuff like that.
Okay. Well, that's really, okay. So then Serbia, for how long were you in Serbia then?
So until 1999 or 2000, something like this. And then I went back to Portugal again.
Okay.
And again, like 2-3 years just freelancing there. I did interesting things. And then at that time, I went into film. Again, Branko Neško, my friend, was there.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, I'm coming back.
Okay. And did he get into film and that's how you got into
film?
Yeah,
he got into film. Big amount of, large amount of clients. Biggest film directors of Portugal. Uh-huh. All working from him. France, Portugal.
Right.
The northern part of Africa.
Okay.
And he's an amazing guy. He would do so much for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mixed towns for, even if you are, you know, very, very low budget movies from Luanda, from, I don't know, Ivory Coast, whatever. Mm-hmm. And small movies in France, Portuguese movies are small, you know, mm-hmm. budgets in Europe are, that time were like, if you got like 5 million, you were like,
huge.
Oh my God,
yeah.
I'm going to do crazy stuff.
Right.
He worked with a lot of Wim Wenders was shooting. He would mic all the, you know, so he would do everything from small stuff to huge. So
but he was an audio guy.
He is an audio guy.
Right.
But he knew everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I got, through him, I got to do little things here and there.
Right.
Which were for that time, pretty big things. A couple of things then. So this is 2000 through 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Two big things were like, oh my God, I did so many things. It's crazy. So one was the restoration of the ancient, you know, like old beginning of the 19th century movies about Lisbon.
Mm-hmm.
So Manuel Oliveira is the bard of Portuguese cinema. He is, you know, the father of the Portuguese cinema.
Okay.
And he wanted to restore these movies. And they were looking like, oh, how are we going to do this, you know? And I don't know how, I don't even remember.
Mm-hmm.
There was this company called Puffin Designs.
Puffin, okay, like the bird?
Yes, like a bird. Right. Even the icon,
right.
The icon was a bird.
Right.
That weird, big
yep.
beak.
Yep.
So they had this program that would remove automatically, you know.
Scratches.
Scratches, cloning tools were amazing. Mm-hmm. So I went into this and did a little bit of restoration on these movies.
Oh, yeah.
That was one little freelance gig. The other one was, the next one was, oh my God, what was the name of the movie? The director was a woman from Norway, mm-hmm. Solveig Nordlund.
Mm-hmm.
She's a pretty big director, but she lives in Portugal. So she is a Portuguese director.
Right.
So she had this sci-fi adaptation of the novel, sci-fi movie she made.
Okay.
Actually, the scenes I worked on were shot in Troy, where you guys now...
Oh, Troy, yeah.
Yes.
Nice.
So there was like a biplane, you know, the crop duster airplane flying.
Yeah.
You remember those hotel towers there?
Yes.
So the crop duster was going around. I'm really sorry. I would have to look up. I didn't really prepare this so long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was Philip K. Dick novel or something like that. So it was her own version of something like this. Mm-hmm. So I had to add a green gas coming out of the airplane, you know, like
like a poison gas.
Poison gas, alien.
What year was this about?
This 2001, something like that.
Oh, yeah, so really.
It's either 2000, 2001 or 2002. I think it's 2001.
Okay.
So I had these shots. I did that, you know, however I could in my home, you know.
Right.
In Restelo, it's part of the Lisbon.
Mm-hmm.
I did that. However successful, you know, under quotes, however I could do it.
Right.
And then the big, Goran Paskaljevic is a big Serbian director, one of probably 10. The biggest ones. I got to work on his movie a little bit. So I did a version of Call Meany, you know, the Irish actor.
Mm-mm.
Call Meany. He was in the Star Trek series too. And
okay.
So I had to work something on him, transforming him into a tree.
This is really cool stuff. And these are also Portuguese films and European films. And
so this was Serbian film, but because Branko was doing mixed
down. Ah, right.
So Goran Paskaljevic, director, mm-hmm. flew in to Lisbon for the final mix down, and he gave me this.
Oh,
in
some
a friendly,
shots.
In the friendly way.
Right. Like, I got some shots for you.
I got some shots for you, so I did it. I don't think I was successful because they redid eventually. They changed some storylines, so my stuff that I did didn't really end up in the movie. Or I'm not totally sure.
Okay.
I'm not totally sure. But it was amazing experience for me. I got mm-hmm. paid and everything, a lot back then. It was like amazing.
Right.
So that, I mean, I bought a car after.
Wow. Enough to buy a car. That was good.
Enough to buy a car. So it was big and it gave me, the most important thing about that was that it emboldened me so much to go movie direction.
Right.
So VFX and do my own. So I did my own movie then. After that. So I leave Portugal again, 2002.
Okay.
For 1 year, I go back to Belgrade.
Uh-huh.
And I do my own short movie. I should show that to you. I have it somewhere.
Well, give us the link. We'll put it on the podcast page.
I don't have it online even. This is so old. The internet was not even, you know, okay. 2002. Come on.
Yeah.
It was called Rio.
Rio.
Yeah. And it was 8 minutes, one shot, 8 minutes CG, full CG.
A single 8 minute shot.
Single 8 minute shot.
Wow.
And so I went to festivals. I never got any substantial award, but I was managed. I got, you know, diplomas and stuff.
Right.
From Czech Republic to actually Rio de Janeiro. Anima Mundi, right? Anima Mundi.
Okay.
Hiroshima. To this day, Hiroshima Animation mm-hmm. Festival in Japan. To this day, every year I get, you know, hey, do you have another film? Send us.
Wow, cool.
So that was my little director gig on my own. I did it all by myself again. Mm-hmm. Finished that. Should I keep going?
Yes, of course.
So finish that festivals, but no money, you know, but fame and all that. And the best thing is like, hey, I can do this, you know.
Yeah.
So then Final Fantasy comes out.
Yes.
And I'm blown away. And I'm out of Portugal. I'm interviewing for a job in Switzerland, in Lausanne,
mm-hmm.
for a CG company. I didn't like it, so I didn't end up there.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened, Final Fantasy was in the hotel I was staying, on the pay-per-view, whatever.
Yeah.
I think I watched it all night, like 5 times. Yeah. So that was like, okay, this, everything is done.
Okay, so I'm curious about that because obviously Final
Fantasy... Everybody hates the movie.
I know.
But
I
saw beyond...
I think it's an important movie, and I mention it many times. One, it was one of the first movies where people sort of discovered the uncanny valley in some ways.
Sure.
It's also the movie that said, it was one of the most daring.
The Undertaking.
Daring Undertaking.
Oh my God.
And it didn't necessarily succeed, but it should be. I feel that.
Without that.
Nothing would have been.
Nothing.
Done. Right. And I feel the same way about like the original Tron, for example. None of people thought it was a. Meh, whatever. And, you know, I had Richard Taylor on,
mm-hmm.
who was one of the guys who did the CG on the original Tron. So he was been on the podcast. And I still think it's like, if it wasn't for Tron, not much other stuff would have been done. And I think the same thing for Final Fantasy. Like, these guys tried something really, really daring, and it was just a little bit ahead of its time. Or not a little bit, very much.
I had a fever. Right. Literally, I had a fever and restlessness in a way that I have to start doing something tomorrow. There is no time. We have to go now.
Yeah.
The field is wide open. Let's grab the flag.
I love the fact that that was your inspiration. A lot of people say, it was Jurassic Park, this and that. And I was like,
That too. But, you know, like, it's weird. So my it's the same time, right? It's the same time. But for me, I realized, I even got the Godzilla file, XSI, original Godzilla. So not Jurassic Park, but original Godzilla file with the Godzilla in the XSI scene file. Somehow I got that. But I realized, hey, I can't, this is too much to bite. It has to be like a big company, a lot of machinery. If I go now like that, I would be just a tiny something, you know. But where Final Fantasy looked like, I could do some of these environments. I could do shot work on this. Somehow it looked. Because it was all CG. So it looked like easier. So that was like major motivation for me.
Right.
Where Jurassic Park was like amazing beyond, you know. But it was too much for me to use that as an inspiration. Where Final Fantasy was like, oh my God. You know?
Right.
Yeah. It's still today, I mean.
Yeah.
I love to say that and to praise that day. In the hotel room in Switzerland. Oh my God. You know, like... 5 times.
But you see, it was so important, you actually remember where you were.
Before the airplane. Then I have to go hop on a train, go to Zurich on an airplane so that I can fly back home.
Right.
And I'm like tired, blue eyes, everything, and happiest times, you know.
That's cool. So what did you do with that?
So that's how it works. That's why I made an 8-minute long shot.
Gotcha.
So that came.
That was inspired by that.
Instantly after that.
Right.
One single thing. So I want to give this movie to everybody. There's no internet. You know, there are no MP4 files. Right. YouTube does not exist for decades yet.
Right.
So I learned outsourcing on DVD. So I would outsource my own DVDs and my short films, send everywhere.
Right.
And it was so convenient and so nice to know, with menus and everything. So movie goes out, festivals, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, okay, restless. So now I have to go next step. What it is. So I send like my reel out into the world. Sofia, Bulgaria. I remember. So this was my thing. Sofia, Bulgaria, Ubisoft, Montreal, Cairo. You wouldn't believe Cairo in Egypt.
Well, first of all, who is Sofia?
I don't remember.
Yeah. And who in Cairo?
Don't remember. It's a small jingle making.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was not big. So I sent to various degrees.
Right. All over the world.
All over the world. So I sent, Ubisoft was big. They wanted me. By the way, I got reply, but I found better. So Ubisoft and then... a few companies in LA and RealFX Dallas, Texas.
Yeah.
And I got in RealFX. So I started working from Belgrade, actually.
Yep.
On a couple of projects, modeling, texturing, just sending them files.
When were you in RealFX?
So I got there in November 2004.
Okay.
But all that before November, I already worked for them from over there.
Okay.
And even then, oh my God, what was the name of their system? They have an amazing asset and production tool, and shot work and tool. They had their own proprietary. Oh my God, I forgot what's.
Did you know, was Chris Bankoff there when you were there?
I think so, yeah.
You know Chris?
Yeah.
I worked with him for years at Sway Studio and at Method.
Yeah, he was, my immediate guy was Brad Booker.
Okay.
I had awesome stories there, but there's no time now. But amazing, I love that guy. I love Brad Booker. I have to email him. I will email you today. But really, but Then I love Dallas. I came in, they got me in, whatever.
Yeah.
I did a lot of work for them, like mainly modeling.
Mm-hmm.
I was fast.
Right.
Super fast. And also at the same time, I was published everywhere. I was in all the Elemental and, you know, Ballistic Publishing.
Oh, yeah.
Everywhere. I was in 3DS Max Bible, the Kelly, the Kelly guy. I was in, if you go like version 7, version 8, version 9. I was in every book.
Okay.
Designed my car for Peugeot. It's a French car manufacturer. Designed, I was top 10. Oh. I got like a real award and stuff.
Right.
So there was a lot of activity there.
Yeah.
But then Real FX, I got in and I worked there and got still published in some publications from Ballistic.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing at Real FX?
So I was just modeling stuff. I was modeling like photoreal stuff for like motorcycle manufacturer commercial. Modeled an airplane that was used, that the airplane that was, what's the Arizona?
The Arizona one?
Prisoner of war, famous politician. Oh, my God.
The main. Oh, John McCain.
John McCain. So they were doing his movie. The biopic. Small movie, B movie, let's say. I mean, so these are all my opinions.
Right.
So I modeled the
airplane.
Skyhawk, yeah. Uh-huh. The airplane that he was, I still have stills, I can say.
It was shot down or something.
It was shot down. So I modeled that with great joy.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that, you know, I modeled to a lot of things.
Hmm.
There was like a straight to DVD they were doing. One of these toys, Hasbro.
Okay.
Move straight to DVD movie. I modeled a lot.
Right.
Aquaman, or I don't know. I don't really remember. Sure. Something like that. Then they were doing a lot of stuff, exploring possibilities a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, your wife's flame artist, they had that already really.
Oh, they had big flames over there.
Huge.
Yeah.
Smoke, flame, and everything.
Yeah. They were a big Inferno back then, I think.
Inferno. Yeah. Right, they were big. Like, the studio is ginormous.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. For 15 years, I don't know now. Like
it 12. Still is. Well, they still got an office in Santa Monica. I don't know how big their Dallas office is. I'm sure it's pretty big still.
I moved with them from downtown to a new offices. It was huge.
Yeah.
While I was there.
How long were you there for?
So only 7 months. But really? It feels way longer.
Seems like you did a lot of work there 7 months.
I did a lot of work, but I mean, it was pretty normal. Normal hours, normal, you know. Right. I was just very fast.
Right.
Always to this day, really fast.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember. There was more stuff. Disney. Mm-hmm. I worked with. Oh my God! I spent.
That's right. They did. I think they did a bunch of Disney work, right?
I did with Disney people, you know.
Right.
They would giving me notes, modeling some special version of Mickey Mouse and
stuff. Right.
I have those summers. So something didn't. Oh, I know exactly what happened.
Sure.
So I'm there,
mm-hmm.
and then this Rockfish, freaking Blur, Tim Miller's
mm-hmm.
Rockfish comes out, the short.
Right.
With an idea that that's gonna be a movie.
Okay. Yeah.
A feature length, and I've got blown. And
so you had the Final Fantasy moment again, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
Like even more crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I emailed Tim directly. I got his email somehow. I don't remember how. Yes. But his email is so...
So simple.
So simple.
I'm sure most people can guess it.
I emailed... I'm still in Thrill FX. They have me over for a weekend.
Sure.
I mean, interview was non-existent.
Right.
Go into the room.
You meet Tim.
5 minutes.
And this is when they had their office on Abbot Kinney?
So on Abbot Kinney, one. No, not the original one, across the comic book store.
Right.
So they already moved into the bigger one.
The bigger one, it's on Venice.
Electric Avenue.
Yep.
Or Venice, the main entrance is on Venice.
Right.
Where the Vice is now there.
Yes.
The Vice took over after they 10x for rent or something.
It's ridiculous.
Literally 5 minute interview, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Something unbelievable.
What year was this?
So 2005. And I think I started mid-July.
Right.
I flew back and then flew back, moved back.
Right.
To LA. That's Jolly Roger, the hotel.
Right.
It's famous.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was Blur. And then from then on, 8 years.
So you spent 8 years at Blur. What were you? You started off as a scene assembly guy there?
Yeah, or? Scene assembly, lighting and environment modeling.
Right.
And after a year and a half, immediately I was supervisor.
Yeah.
So.
That's a, well.
And then lots of supervising stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of awesome how, because I even talked about it in the podcast with Tim, and we did a little, you know, interview, and like a little video with him too. He goes out there and looks for people mm-hmm, himself mm-hmm. individually.
Yes.
And
he finds people.
He finds people himself. Mm-hmm. And the way.
And Blur is a very, very special place.
In a sense, yeah, because.
Unlike any place.
Because other places, you know, if you go to SIGGRAPH, at least during that time, right? You look around 2004, 2005, you go to SIGGRAPH, you try to get a job there, right? They're going to go, you're going to talk to a recruiter, and they say, we have a slot for a lighter. Are you a lighter? We have a slot for a hard surface modeler. Yeah. And they're like, okay, maybe, yes, you don't have any film experience. Thank you, but see you later. Like, they don't. That's the way recruiting works. And it's terrible in a sense because you don't really have the chance to find someone special.
And for people like me.
Right.
You would
have fallen through the cracks.
And I wouldn't even apply there.
Right.
You know, because it's not, we needed someone who, like Tim.
Right.
That will, hey, just come over.
Tim literally goes on the like CG Society forums or.
Oh, you know, looks at it, finds total, an image.
Whatever they are. And he looks at it and is like, I'm going to follow that guy.
Who did that image?
Who did that image? Yep. Let me follow that guy. And then he'll literally, that's, he's like, find out about this guy.
And my experience from Real Effects, I had amazing grant. Look, I was published. Mm-hmm. The stills were published. So my treatment, the final image mm-hmm. was pretty amazing. And if you look now, those images, even now, mm-hmm. pretty amazing. But again, you come to Blur and the shock of the real production, real pipeline. I mean, like, ooh,
well,
I'm
I wouldn't call Blur a real pipeline. It is a pipeline.
Yeah.
because it differs, not to say that it's a wrong pipeline, but it differs so much from any other pipeline I've ever seen.
That's why it's called Blur pipeline.
Yeah. It's very, very different. I mean, like, no one's job is. Like the term scene assembly, I only know that because I hang around Blur.
It's an event.
No one else has that term.
No, it's a Blur term, yeah.
Yeah.
And even to this day, we use it. Even when we go to other places, we use it.
Right.
Because, whatever. Compositing and everything. You know?
But you're obviously still very friendly with the people at Blur, even though you've moved on from there.
Oh, yeah. I love the place.
And you were there for 8 years. And can you say where you went after that? Or
So I was there for like maybe.
You said about 8 years, right?
Yeah. So I was 8 years all total. This is what happened. So after 6 years, uh-huh. I'm totally burnt out.
Yeah.
So I got a Pixar interview. Uh-huh. I went there, 5 hour interview all day. Mm-hmm. Great. Got the call back. Come work for Cars 2, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just realized, oh my God, no, you know, I'm just going to take a sabbatical. So I took a year off.
Interesting.
And then I did some music, you know, I was already a member. I published, like, I have a couple of albums on iTunes. Mm-hmm. They sold zero, but still, you know, I have stuff published, produced. I had a little studio, whatever. Mastered and everything. So it was just, I loved doing stuff.
Right.
So I took a year, did that, rested, whatever, and then talked with, I think, Brandon Reza from Blur, effects artist, effects master. And then Tim somehow said, hey, there's a chair here.
Okay.
So I got back to Blur.
Oh, okay.
Again. And then 3 more years. Six, so that's maybe even 9 years. Maybe.
All right. So you took a year off.
I took a year off.
And then he's like, come on back.
Yeah, and we refreshed, you know.
Right.
Back in the business.
Right.
And then again, a ton of stuff. Yeah, right. Just produce. Supervise. Shot work. A lot. A lot of pieces. In 3 years again, like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you have to move not to go away from the place. Sometimes that happens too, but you have to, the good thing of moving is to go learn something else somewhere else.
Right. New experiences.
New experiences. Right. Because the industry is so small, it's really, I encourage that. Mm-hmm. I encourage people to move around. Because you go and pick so much, it's everybody gains.
Yeah. If you come back, you come back with a whole new skill set.
That's how they do it.
Right.
How they do it. This is how they do it. Yeah. So that's how I think it's good. I mean, it's terrible for people that have to move, you know, with houses, cats and dogs and kids
and
Vancouver's and, you know, all that. I mean, I wish it was not. I wish I was at Blur for 20 years.
Sure.
Yeah, deep down, that would be the best.
Like, right.
You go to Disney and that's it.
Right.
50 years at Disney.
Right.
But somehow it doesn't work like that. You know, you have to go move around.
Right.
So I went to ILM.
Oh, okay.
My friends were there already, and I was like, hey, what about this? And got in like this, you know?
Right.
And then
this is under the what do they call them? The generalist group now. They call it
generalist group,
right? Because it used to be the Digimat department.
Digimat. Yeah. Oh, fantastic! Richard Bluff, amazing.
Nice.
Oh my god, I love that guy. Yeah.
And they were doing a bunch of things. Basically, they didn't the whole thing. They were operating a lot like Blur, where they basically
absolutely.
Where it's like, yeah, do in the tool you want.
Look, Luis.
Do it all yourself, basically. Max and V-Ray, I think. Mostly.
Oh, Luis Calero, my friend who I sit with together at the desk at Blur, he went there first.
Mm-hmm.
He brought V-Ray there.
Yeah.
Richard Bluff, one day, Luis, hey, let me show you this. They were rendering with Brazil, Digimat paintings.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he shows him V-Ray now. And bam, you know, Pacific Rim, all V-Ray.
Yeah.
It's a great department. Look, this is all my opinion.
Sure.
Lovely, lovely department. Incredibly powerful.
Yep.
Like one department that kind of just finishes stuff more easier than other departments. That's how
it's not convoluted.
Yeah, it's very like, hey, you can do a small thing or you can do an entire freaking sequence.
Right.
And one man can do it.
Yep.
Sometimes.
Yep.
But yeah, great. Johan Thorngren.
I know Johan, yeah.
Yeah. A lovely, lovely people.
Lovely guy. Yeah. I want him on the podcast. I'll have to get him on.
Please.
I know, but I have to, I think I'm going to go. I think at some point soon, I'm going to make a trip up to the Bay Area and record some podcasts. But Johan's
amazing
great.
Guys.
So nice.
Amazing guys there. Johan, so I've
all the Swedes are nice.
Oh, incredible guy. Yeah. Totally. I learned so much from him, from Richard, from...
So you moved up there and everything, right?
Yeah, full on. So the way Lindsay and I, we like to live.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no temporary job.
Sure.
So we move somewhere, it's...
Right.
You saw my house, you know? It's full on living.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved there, full on living, you know? Life goes on like we'll be there for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun.
How long were you there for, though?
2 years.
2 years, yeah. Okay.
Like something, maybe.
Right.
Or slightly less.
Right.
And just a few minutes. Lucy. Worked on Lucy with Luc Besson. With Richard.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I loved it. That was amazing. Just the experience. Uh-huh. Hey. Ryan, the producer, like you sit with the director. I mean, look, like everybody does that there. So Luc Besson says, hey, this needs to be like color Bordeaux color.
Mm-hmm. Like the wine.
Yeah, like the wine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bordeaux is just a color.
It is a color too.
And then there is a wine.
But I always think of the wine.
But then there is wine. But this is what happens. Ryan, the producer, amazing producer.
Uh-huh.
So Luc Besson says this on the shot I was working on, needs to be like more like a Bordeaux-ish color.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow morning, Ryan comes, producer. brings me the bottle of wine. Here it is for reference.
Right.
The bottle of wine.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, great.
Yeah. So, that's a good one.
That was, the, yeah, great. And then, I don't know, Ben Snow, oh my God.
Yeah.
What a humongous person.
Really? I haven't met him yet.
I don't know. I didn't work with many people. Uh-huh. Like, there are people who worked there like on 10, 15 movies. I only worked with 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So people I met are all mind-blowing experiences, a lot to learn, incredible. So Ben Snow on Avengers Age of Ultron.
Yep.
I got a big chunk there. I was like a lead artist for that whole city going up.
Oh, yeah, right.
And so I did a lot of stuff that many other artists had to use. Mm-hmm. And then I did all parts of my own completely shots. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, I think my last was one, just one, my last thing there was Terminator Genesis, just one shot. opening shot where the San Francisco explodes or whatever.
Okay. Well, I want to, and if you're okay with it, unless there's something I'm missing, but I want to kind of get to some of the VR stuff that you're doing, because that's some of the stuff that we...
So, yeah, that happened last year.
That happened last year. Mm-hmm. So you embraced VR, and I've seen how excited you get when you talk about it, which is infectious, right? you've embraced this as a new medium and have explored this technique for a while, for a year. But in a year, you've done a huge amount of exploration. And it was really kind of interesting to talk to you about it because you're very pragmatic about what it is. You don't make any delusions about what you think this is possible. But what sort of drove you into that? What inspired you to get into VR? What was the Final Fantasy thing?
Simple things. Yeah, very, very simple things. So my wife is an animation producer. So we have a same language.
Sure.
Nothing. We just... So this is how it happened. So last year was 2016. Mm-hmm. Google starts Cardboard in 2015.
Right.
And then January 2006, so I'm kind of late. And I never explored. There are people exploring VR 2 decades ago. Mm-hmm. And they're still in and, you know, all these, there are amazing achievements already. But it was amazing. We just woke up one Saturday, I remember in January last year. And with coffee, we just said, hey, let's look into this VR thing. Mm-hmm. Next thing, same day, we ordered first Google Cardboard and another one, plastic one. Mm-hmm. So three headsets. I didn't know if it works with Android, that it works with iOS, nothing. Mm-hmm. So then I started looking into it. So Kevin Margo's, I think on Chaos Group, there was a little blog post.
Yeah, probably wrote it.
I managed somehow. Like, look, I can't even remember all the details because there was so much data going in my brain that I had to erase some of the memory too, you know, like there's sure. only like 8 gigabytes. Yeah. So I saw his Construct 2 stills, read his, like all the data. I love data. I love how to figure out stuff. Mm-hmm. And, managed first to view his cubic renders.
Yeah.
That was the first thing, just to see them in these things that Amazon delivered 3 days later.
Right, the cardboard, right.
Okay, what? How do I make the steel? Right. Follow his instructions, follow some other people's instructions. So first thing was to make the steel.
Right.
Of the character in a freaking, you know, desert environment.
Right.
So because I created the first steel, mm-hmm. just seeing something I've been always working in a frame, mm-hmm. now feeling it in the all around me,
yeah,
that was it.
Right. If there's no frame anymore.
There's
it's frameless.
No frame.
It's oh, frameless.
No. And
I love that idea, frameless buffer.
Yes. And, you know, the image was crappy because I just, okay, let me try this. Let's just render this. But the image looked so much better than looked, you know, the illumination directly mm-hmm. into your eye
yep.
of the phone just made all the imperfections of the image slightly disappear. Mm-hmm. So I got tricked, you know, oh my God, this is amazing. You know, mm-hmm. there was no part. So this is just a single frame, right? No parallax. Yep. Yep, no, yep. It's just a single frame, stereoscopic though.
3 degrees of freedom.
Yes.
Right.
And V-Ray, I mean, you know, just...
out of the box.
So that's the biggest thing.
Right.
Exactly. That's the biggest thing. Like, hey, the icons I never looked, you know, the V-Ray toolbar in mm-hmm. Max. Now I suddenly, hey, what are... like, wait. Mm-hmm. The camera, stereoscopic helper. Mm-hmm. Oh, IPD... it was only side by side back then. Now you have over under, mm-hmm. you know, pole conversion. Yeah. I was like, wait, this thing's doing it. So that's how I rendered the first frame.
Right.
I mean, out of like 5 attempts, I managed to show it.
Nice.
Correctly in Orbis player.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about that whole thing? Because,
It was cubic maps.
It was cube maps, right. So I remember specifically when it was happening. VR was starting and this and that. And we were like I said, I always enter and they talk a lot about VR on the podcast. But I'm always skeptical about it because that's the thing. That's the only way that it's going to advance is if people constantly question it and don't blindly follow what it's going to do, right? But at this point, I'm like, there's some VR stuff going on, VR, and I was like, okay, I'm not... it was very hard for me to envision the practical uses for it in the early stages. Mm-hmm. It was great tech demos, and that's about it. But then the Orbix stuff actually is done by one of our competitors called the Otoy, right?
Yes.
And so those guys, and John Carmack did a post about it, who's a consultant for Otoy, or he may have worked with them. I don't know what he did.
Right.
But he basically justified why the cube map is superior,
yeah,
and specifically in the still format than Latlongs. And I was like, oh,
yes,
this makes sense. And the more I was thinking about it, I was like, and you know, if you really think about the total resolution, because you're only seeing a window within the thing, but if you move your head around, you need a lot of resolution,
yes,
and you need to maximize the quality. I was like, that makes sense, and so we just adopted that format.
Yes.
And it's very easy. It's just basically just a cube map in a specific order side by side, and it just works, right?
Yes. So why it's beautiful, but so the problem, you can't play it everywhere.
No. So you only had a few. Now you have much more players now.
You have players, but you can't play it on YouTube. You can't play it on. So this is, that's where I have to, because I'm just one guy.
Right. You need distribution.
Yeah, because why? Because we all need to show stuff. Mm-hmm. Because it's like a little battle. We have to contribute to the whole VR stuff, whatever that is,
right.
You know, with our own little pieces here and there, tests, old tests. Mm-hmm. So that it you know, that people get, you know, if you can show to 10 people
right.
something you made something helpful. Mm-hmm. For the entire thing. So I wanted to have my stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
And then I realized, I looked at other people, Chris Milk, you know, Verse, back mm-hmm. then, now Within. Mm-hmm. But back then it was Verse. I saw the evolution of Verse, the piece, Digital Domain helped him. I saw that.
With the baby in the train.
With the baby, yeah, the train.
That was rendered in V-Ray too, actually.
It was? Man. Oh, it's incredible. I'm the speed of the speed. You know, that's why I was able to render thousands of, in last year, thousands and thousands of frames.
Right. On your house.
In my house. On a powerful machine.
Right.
Which my wife let me get, but.
Right.
I would go, you know, just leave it rendering.
Right.
Now I'm doing a shot, 3,000 frames, 8K. Doing another test.
But you're also doing 60 frames a second too, right?
So I'm rendering these 3,000 frames. I'm rendering everything set, all the simulations, all right. the car. It's a car. Mm-hmm. It's a car sim. Everything is at 60.
Right.
but I might decide to play it at 30. Mm. So it's going to look like, it's just I'm testing stuff. But right. I realized early on that long shots are beautiful stuff in VR.
Yeah, because it's awkward to cut.
But
you can do it.
You can do it. And it might really work. I saw some pieces. Oh my God, I don't feel cuts I'm in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, long shots are finally something.
Yeah, go back to your 8-minute short.
Go back to that, yes. Yeah. Thousands of frames.
Real, right? Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. But look around everywhere.
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest thing that you learned? So you took that year, right? And I know exactly what time it was because I was involved in helping Kevin with that stuff, and we were looking at the cube maps and we were rendering stuff, and it was probably my blog post that you watched. So I know exactly that time frame. That's not, to me, it doesn't seem like that long ago, but obviously in that time you've learned a lot. What are some of the biggest?
So I rendered all. I rendered cube maps. I rendered different resolutions. Yeah. I rendered. So now I'm rendering different frame rates.
Right.
So by the way, for everybody, 60 is works and it's amazing.
Yeah.
But the resolution that you're, for example, if you want to play it on Android phone, mm-hmm. Resolution is slightly less than UHD.
So what I would, okay, first of all, we should clarify this, right? Because uh-huh. a lot of people say, what do you mean 60? 60 is not enough for VR. You need 75 or 90. That's the spec. Now.
Not really. That is like, this is pre-rendered. So I'm talking about pre-rendered
stuff. I understand. But some people don't understand that. Oh, even because you're still getting 75 or 90 frames a second
in the headset.
Feedback on the headset.
Yes.
Right? But that doesn't mean that the content you're watching has to match that resolution either.
So remember that one movie that Peter Jackson did, or who did it at 48?
Oh, The Hobbit.
How we hated the clarity of it.
Right.
So now in VR, we love it.
Yeah, but the same reason why people love it in games, right?
Same. You don't need motion blur. You don't need a lot of things are redundant. Mm-hmm. You just get a really, so the smoother the motion of you.
Yeah.
Inside, it's gonna better trick you that you are somewhere else elsewhere, you know,
right.
In that you're having that experience and it's real. So if your render is also photoreal and it's at 48 or 60 frames per second, mm-hmm. the effect of immersiveness is incredibly
enhanced.
Yeah. Incredibly. And Kevin, Margo, I still have those. It was just one day. I was like, okay, how do I do it? So mm-hmm. I messaged him. So it was like 5-6 messages on the mm-hmm. iPhone where he basically persuaded me, yes, go ahead, try it.
Okay.
Even though he didn't test, maybe.
So you tested everything. You looked at cube maps for stills.
Learning is for me is to learn everything I can about pre-rendered stuff, which I, at the moment, prefer. Mm-hmm. And I like to go to, I see that we are branching out into three things.
You know, okay, a lot of people have said it. And I know that, like, for example, Ed Ulbrich is over at Method, and he's partly responsible for the VR department there. And he's a great guy. But he's like, no, there's pre-rendered content, and then there's real-time content. And it's like, they don't have to be exclusive from each other.
Yes. I totally agree. So I'm starting experimenting with Unity too.
Right. Because people assume, let's go back to this because you and I know this and we can talk about it. Mm-hmm. People assume that pre-rendered content is 3 degrees of freedom.
Yeah.
And that's not true.
That's not true.
Because we have actually.
But immersiveness is there.
Yes. Immersiveness is there. And higher quality content comes from pre-rendered.
Incredibly high.
Much higher quality.
Incredibly high.
So we know that, like, for example, the guys, the NoZone guys have been on the podcast, right? So we talked about presence and that technology. And I know you've been beta testing
it. Another incredible thing.
Right. We've been looking at it and people, and that is 6 degrees of freedom pre-rendered content.
With V-Ray.
It's not, and it exists, and while there's present systems, and there's other systems that are out there as well. I want to make sure that those people don't get upset that I'm just mentioning presence.
Yes.
But there are other systems out there which are not necessarily very public yet. But All of them are very good. Right now, the Presence one is a great example.
And even just to intervene, not only CGI, there is that hype VR.
Yes.
They are doing the depth maps.
Yes.
They have parallax in the live footage. It's amazing. I love these guys.
Yeah.
It was fantastic to see.
So yeah, and it's a perfect example because people are like everything has to look like a 1990s video game.
But I will tell you one. So this is perfect thing to say now what you're saying.
Right.
So I claimed, like, this is how I feel. Oh, yeah, I want to do a volumetric video right now with Presence. I'm on beta. It's amazing. I can see what I want to do already. Right. It's going to be amazing. But I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't because, you know, it's only beta and, you know, I can't show you without coming to your home and bringing everything with me.
Or the player, right?
Yeah, the player and, you know, whatever. But I don't want to be one of those people to always find, we have to spit out now stuff.
Right.
Even if there is no parallax. Mm-hmm. But still, we have to start making high quality, beautiful content mm-hmm. with what we have.
Okay.
Because everything else will come. I will be having parallax in my movies in 2 years, mm-hmm. easily. Mm-hmm. But why? I don't want to wait for that because I know that's coming.
Right.
But I want to have now, even if I don't have parallax, you have depth.
Right.
So that will be like, you know, soundless movies.
Right.
Black and white. Mm-hmm. Then after that, we'll add sound. Mm-hmm. Have a few years of that. Then we'll add color. Mm-hmm. Have a few years of that. Then, you know, so we cannot wait for everything to be perfect.
Right.
We need to, you know, V-Ray gives me, the tools are there. You mm-hmm. can, I can teach you in one day how to render your own first pre-rendered stuff and put it in your Samsung phone or view it in Oculus. Mm-hmm. And you will be amazed. You will move your head. There's no parallax, but you will be in the environment. Mm-hmm. Boundless in your environment and still feel pretty good about the depth. Yeah. Same 360 videos, you know. I enjoy a lot of the real footage 360 video, even monoscopic. Mm-hmm. If the content is something really, it's nice to, you know, put the headset on and just wander.
Right.
Wander away. So we have to put this stuff out. We can't wait for the perfect solution. Because perfect solution is coming. That's my opinion.
Right. So, and I, first of all, it's been really great because you've been able to show me a lot of tools that I need, right? Because I do know some tools and I do use them, but it was great to have you over because you've explored every format possible for pre-rendered content.
Yes.
You looked at everything and so you've learned the most about it and you're a great resource in that area, which has been wonderful. Mm-hmm. But you and I also talked about just a general idea of VR. And this is something that the listeners have heard me say before. And it's the idea of the whole narrative and whether that works or not and how that it is. I think you seem very much to be on the same boat as me that you think that VR is – what was the word you used? It's
– I have this word that I – because now I don't – I'm not – I'll wait for the narrative to grow on me. Mm-hmm. But now I totally claim one thing for me is true is I call it form over narrative.
Form over narrative.
Form over narrative.
Right.
It's amazing. You mm-hmm. know, if you just think about the simplicity of it, it's like a zen.
Right.
You know, you can still have incredibly immersive.
Yeah, you and Kevin Mack would be exactly on the same page on this. Yeah. And he lives I think about a half a mile from your house.
I'm going to have him over into my studio.
You guys will hang out and get along famously. But form over narrative is an excellent way of talking about it mm-hmm. because it's experiential and it's a wonderful story. And the narrative, which I also thought was really nice when talking about Kevin, the narrative comes from you describing your experience.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's like saying, oh, I had this amazing experience in Paris. I saw this, I saw that. That's your narrative.
Yes.
But you still were in Paris, and that's the experience.
And it's your own. It's your own. It's your own. It's a different. We'll feel. My wife and I will feel different about it.
Right.
That's also beauty of it.
Right.
You have your own.
But it's the same. It's like, for example, like, I'd rather have a VR experience where I can explore Paris rather than a VR experience where someone is walking me through the streets of Paris.
Absolutely.
Right? Because yes. Then it's my choice. It's my thing. It's first person. I'm just using that as an example. But that's the form that you're talking about. Yes. I love that. Form over narrative.
Form over and even physical. Even mm-hmm. physical. You know, like I'm saying not only 6 degrees of freedom, but I'm also... without story, I'm saying form in even more mundane. Mm-hmm. So how do we cut?
Yes.
How
do you move?
How do you move? What are the points of interest? Mm-hmm. Everybody was talking about all this, but I find form in it mm-hmm. to fulfill.
Right.
I find... you know, mise-en-scène, the French word, yeah. You know, the curtain. We have a scene with characters talking, but the curtain is moving in the wind.
Right.
So I'm interested now in that curtain mm-hmm. and poking light through the window inside
yeah. Yeah.
and bouncing around and making shadows. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm interested in because I can't necessarily jump on a narrative right now. It's
right.
a very complex thing
right.
and unknown. But I don't want to lose time. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be discouraged. Oh, my God, to tell a story in VR is so hard. I should just go back to VFX. You know, no. I mean, let's do what we, again, with what we have, what we can with what we have.
Right.
Now. And still make some amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Can be anything. Wind in the hair, you know, and blowing, and you have a little bit of freedom moving around. Fantastic.
Right. But you were also mentioning the idea of what different mediums that people need to explore. And right now, as you know, you and I have talked about, and I've said it in previous episodes, that everyone seems to focus on games and movies, right?
Yes.
Games and movies, because somehow they feel that the entertainment industry is what is important or what's going to drive VR, which is a shame.
Yes.
Because I think even though you and I come from the entertainment industry, it's still a shame. And I feel like I was talking about the idea of architecture as being a key part of VR that's largely ignored by most of the media.
So you have a you exactly. So in the movies might fail some, how can I say it? You might be putting that headset on in the amazingly fantastical, and you will find yourself in an amazingly fantastical environment. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be that dinosaur there from Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
But you might as well just wander away.
Right.
You might find something else interesting, some other path interesting than staring at the amazingly made dinosaur. You know,
right, yeah.
You might just wander. Right. And that's the beauty of it.
Right.
Yeah, just wander away.
Right.
Yeah. Go, you know, fly, get, you know.
But did you mention something about...
But the other, I know what you mean. It's so movies and games.
Right. What do you think the medium of VR that's
thinking,
largely ignored? Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm on my own projects that I occupy myself mm-hmm. now is let's look one of the... So here is your client.
Mm-hmm.
Just think... So one day I was thinking, man, I love museum. I love art. You know, I love art. I love museums. I love paintings, but I'm more like this, you know, Matthew Barney. Okay.
Right. Who did Spiral Jetty? What was the name of that?
I don't know. Was he?
He was in Salt Lake City. Anyway.
But giant sculptures, giant.
Trumbull and those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Giant land art. Right?
Land art. Who's the, so just to put a few examples, Ken Price, I adore Ken Price. He's mm-hmm. a sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
And his sculptures are like, you know, like sometimes 3 feet, 2 feet by 2 feet, 3 feet by 3 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody can ever experience them in vivo, you know. There was an exhibit at LACMA a couple of years ago where the majority, it was a lot of sculptures there, but that's it. Photogrammetry getting pretty strong, goes great with VR. Let's go. So I was like, okay, how many museums is in US? There's so much work to be done for them.
Right.
So I Googled it. It's like 35,000 museums in the US.
Yeah.
That is an amazing amount of people who need VR now.
Right.
Recreating either one piece or few pieces. It's almost like an archival thing. Also giving giving access to pieces that you can walk around to people who can never travel to a city where that certain piece is.
Well, just like the, you know, for example, you were just talking about Spiral Jetty is like a famous art piece, right?
Yes.
It's huge. It's gone.
It's gone.
It gets swallowed up by the salt, you know, Salt Lake or whatever.
Oh.
So.
And other pieces.
So you can only see pictures of it in a book. Wouldn't it be amazing if you could experience it
and sometimes
recreate it? We could recreate that.
Yes, you can. Or artists that actually their pieces do decay.
Decay.
They're made to, like, that was, you know, it's going to last.
Right. Like an ice sculpture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can archive that and present it to someone in an amazing, amazing way. It's the imagination limit.
I got to get in touch. I used to know some of the back at Rice, there was one of my professors was friends with some of the big land artists.
So I wanted to do a piece.
Yeah. But at that, well, you're working in this area. I know you're looking at this area.
I'm looking at it, yes.
And I think it's fantastic. I think it's a great idea because those pieces are perfect for VR because they are not a narrative. They are form over narrative, right?
They're totally form.
That's exactly right.
Yes. And experiential.
Right.
As if when you go to the museum, it's exactly the same.
Or you go into a cathedral.
Or you go, exactly. You go, exactly. They made thank you.
They thank people you. Go into a cathedral, and what the hell do? They shut up.
Because so it's, like, it exactly might be, you might be totally on track. It's deeply personal for me to make a piece, VR piece, downloadable on Steam. That is a certain art piece. It's deeply personal to make it, but then hoping that it's going to do something for others.
You and Kevin are going to go along like two peas in a pod, my friend.
And there are people. I mean, I play games too. Hey.
Sure.
Like I spent 8 hours with Oculus. 8 hours. I didn't even go to pee.
You're a brave man.
Subnautica. I loved the diving game. Uh-huh. 8 hours in Oculus. I love. I mean, it's not like. I love what Verse is doing with real footage. Jaunt. I love the Invisible Man, I think it's called, the series. Blown away, really. I loved. It's not like. But it's not the only thing.
Right.
So, Chris Milk. I was lucky to just show him at DGA one of the pieces I published.
Sure.
And he immediately asked me, okay, but what's the story? You know, so he goes that way.
Right.
He really is, there has to be a story. It's a humanism.
Right.
We need to
humanize everything.
And it's a great tool for humanity to come out because, yes, you can sit in the refugee camp.
Right.
Be there and see it.
Right.
But and so he's
empathy is that
empathy, it. Empathy. Yeah. So he is there and he's going that route and it's amazing. But I'm just saying there are other possibilities.
Yeah.
And so then I Googled, okay, 35,000 museums is a bit much for my little one man show.
Well, yeah. So I mean, then I think it's wonderful because
But then I was like, okay, how many museums is in LA? Sure. I know five, you know?
Right.
And it was like 150.
Right.
So there is like what's the Jurassic where Werner Herzog drinks his tea. On Venice Boulevard, the Jurassic Technology, the Museum of Jurassic Technology.
Oh yeah, Museum of Jurassic Technology.
Oh, there are so many pieces there. You could do a really nice VR exploration piece. And who can travel to LA to visit that museum?
Right.
I mean, it's hard.
Right. People so can't. You would want to turn that museum into a VR experience.
Yes, or I'm more looking.
Well, yeah, but he's.
I'm more looking at the big the Earth artists. You know, the artists that.
You'll never. It's very hard to get to, or
it's
whatever.
Very hard to get to. It's out there in the desert. Yeah. The pieces, and you will never get there.
Right.
So I want to get in touch.
What's the other one? The lightning field. You know that one?
Oh, so the James Turrell.
James Turrell, yeah.
I want to do him. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I want to do him. I want to get in touch.
He also did the one that was the big, like a disc that he did.
Yeah, yeah.
You know he's a psychologist.
Yeah, yeah. And the creator thing.
The creator. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. The creature.
Yeah. So imagine getting in touch with James, presenting a little project. I think they will love it, you know. And I'm not saying me. Anybody out there, if you have these kind of interests,
Do you have any contacts with James Turrell?
No, I don't.
Okay. I could try. You know, I'll think about that.
Well, I mean,
is he still alive?
Yeah.
Okay. I saw him lecture, but boy, it's like 20 V-ray. Years ago.
It's very V-Ray, for example.
It could be. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a lighting systems.
Mm-hmm.
It would be. An exhibit.
Yeah, yeah. This is what I like. See, I do a podcast and I get another idea at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's very V-Ray. His art is very V-Ray because it would be really hard to recreate his art.
Yes.
The lightings inside, you know, interior lighting that he does, those sculptures, light sculptures, amazing. But V-Ray has tools. In someone's hands.
Well, at the same time, you could, even if he's just using, here's the other thing I think is interesting about, because I don't necessarily think he would want to only do things in VR.
Mm.
But he could use VR as part of his design process.
Oh, you're just, exactly.
So I was like, what is this going to look like on the 14th of June at 2:35 p.m., right? There you'll know.
So yeah, for the project I want to do, that I'm working on now, I don't want to just do pre-rendered stuff. I want to do pre-rendered and real time.
Yeah.
With more freedom. So you have both, you know.
Sure.
You have both, and you know it's interesting because we can do whatever we can do now. We can do now, so
right?
We can do now that.
Gotcha.
But yeah, museums. There's many other things, you know.
Right.
Like people will come up with. There are many clients out there waiting for.
Right.
But we have to push, though.
Yeah.
They won't come to us.
I think it's a wonderful idea, and I really like it. All right, we're actually over an hour. But
okay.
I want to before we go, is there anything you want to tell people to look at, to go to, or?
Well,
I mean, we'll put links on there if you want. You can tell me afterwards.
But you can just put, if people want to see, just put my website there.
And what's your website so people know?
Gone Coyote.
GoneCoyote.com.
Yeah.
.com.
And there are nothing is on website, but there are links to YouTube and Vimeo and.
Right.
You know, on YouTube, you can see the VR stuff, possibly play it inside Gear VR. Or
if cardboard.
Yeah. And on Vimeo, it's interesting just to see like left eye full.
Mm-hmm.
So I post those two just for good reference for people to see. So there's Samsung VR, the platform. There are my movies are there.
Okay.
I made two experiences, tech demo experiences.
Sure.
And published them. I published in China too.
Hmm.
They have a platform there, VEER.
Okay.
V-E-E-R. V-E-E-R. I think something like that.
Okay.
And overwhelming, you know. Like in China, people love to see.
People in China love technology stuff.
Yeah,
like
it was overwhelming response. And these were pre-rendered just movies.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So I'm just trying to figure out, and even if it's bad, I'm going to put it out. Let's get the stuff rolling. That's the biggest. That's what I want to say. Just don't wait for the perfect thing.
Right.
Go with the mistakes. Doesn't matter. Just put it out there.
Right.
Monoscopic. Fine. Look, Facebook is still monoscopic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Facebook VR
It's a post of a window on your phone, and you can somehow move it around.
You can move it around, and even in Gear,
which is funny because they own the Oculus.
It's funny, but if you look at it in Gear VR, it's still mono. You just see one eye.
Yeah.
So hey, but there are pieces I love there. Yeah. So don't wait for the perfect things.
No, just experience it. Enjoy the evolution.
Because all the better things definitely are coming. So.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right, we're going to wrap it up, but thanks so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.